back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and today we are looking at the final entry in Camelot 3000, which means that Gene Hendrix is along for the ride, as has been the case for the first 11 issues. What's going on, Gene?
Oh, not a whole lot, Paul. We're just going to send this series out with a bang.
Yes, so to speak. And just for fun, we decided to invite Sean Whalen to join us for this one as well. Sean, welcome aboard.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm excited to talk about this.
Now, I guess we'll start out by asking, because Gene and I have been waxing poetic and just, I don't think we could have enjoyed this series more than we have through the first 11 issues. But I wanted to start off with, what's your experience with Camelot 3000?
So I do another podcast called Raging Bullets, and we did Camelot 3000 on that a few years ago. And it was, this came out in, what was it, 82? Am I right on the year?
This issue started, came out in 85, so
it started in 82.
Yeah.
Long time.
But the series in general, it was one of those that just at that age, I missed it. I love the writer. I love the artist. The draw with doing it on my other podcast was, how did I miss this? Why did I not read it? And just fell in love with it. I love the story of King Arthur. I love Camelot, all the variations and versions of it. So, you know, the opportunity to do some form of comic book version of it where they were looking at a reincarnation in the future and all that, that's right up my alley. I love all this kind of stuff. And I loved about this story, and we'll obviously be diving a lot more into that, was just how deeply they dealt with what reincarnation could really do to somebody in its various forms. It's very, very smart, and hits on themes that I think even today are ones that we're kind of not always comfortable talking about. So it's going to be, it's a very, very interesting story for what it was doing at that time. You want to talk about cutting edge. This is a cutting edge story.
I'm going to steer us off that road for just a moment. And I have not discussed this guys with you guys at all, but I got a private message from Gary Arkell asking about another series that had a Camelot 500 story in it. DC Universe Legacies number 7, and I wanted to just check to see if either of you are familiar at all with that.
I want to be.
Yeah, I have not heard of that until just now.
I had not heard of it either, and I have not been able to get access to the actual issues, but I did punch up the DC Wiki, and there's a 3-paragraph synopsis of the story, because the main story has to do with Doomsday and Batman and has nothing to do with Camelot. But there's a second story called Snapshot Reunion, and the synopsis of it is, Ray Palmer is invited by Professor Alpheus Hyatt to his lab, where the latter shows Ray a gold coin, it says engrossed, I assume it means embossed, with the face of the sorceress Morgan Le Fay. Professor Hyatt explains he received the coin from fishing it out of his time pool, but finds no historical record about the coin's existence from the Arthurian period. Given that such a coin struck Morgan Le Fay, would have been the ruler of Camelot, in which it had never happened. Professor Hyatt decides to run upstairs to find more books to explain the coin's existence, while leaving Ray with the time pool. Thus, Ray secretly becomes the Atom, travels back in time to Camelot through the time pool to learn the coin's origin. The Ray finds himself, it keeps saying the Ray, it's the Atom and it's Ray Palmer. This is not the best written synopsis in the world. Finds himself in the middle of the fall of Camelot, where King Arthur and his allies, the Shining Knight and the Silent Knight, battle Morgan Le Fay and her forces. During the siege, the Atom unexpectedly saves King Arthur's life from an arrow. Morgan boasts to her brother that the battle favors her and tosses the coin to Arthur bearing her image, claiming Arthur's realm as her own. However, Arthur refutes Morgan's arrogance, and with no other choice, having Merlin to summon the demon Etrigan to tip the battle. The Atom then hears a bell coming from Professor Hyatt's fishing gear, and knowing the professor is back, quickly grabs a coin bearing Arthur's image as a souvenir for his colleague as he rides back on the fishing line back to his time. Ray changes out of his costume and discreetly reunites with Professor Hyatt, who he curiously shows the coin bearing Arthur's image. Ray then personally reflects upon the major figures in the last days of Camelot that would later reappear in the present, such as Shining Knight and Etrigan, and that the legend of Camelot will live on forever. So, this is from an issue that came out in January of 2011. And the story is, let's see, just give me a credits on it.
Yeah, I have found images from the issue. I'll give you the credits. The writer was Len Wein. The artist was Brian Bolland. Alan Pasalawakwa was the colorist, and Rob Lee was the letterer. And yes, King Arthur in that looks like King Arthur does in Camelot 3000.
I did read this. I'm looking at it right now. I pulled it up on DC's app. And just to have the issue in front of me, I read this. Boy, talk about forgetting something that you read that many years ago.
Well, it is almost 15 years ago.
Yeah. as you were talking through Legacies, I'm like, wait a minute, I think I did read that. And I'm looking through, and you know what? I read this before Camelot 3000.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So
that's interesting.
At the time I was reading this, I wasn't making a connection to this. Because I didn't read Camelot 3000 until years later. So it's fun. I actually now want to go back and read the story, this portion of the story, knowing what I know now.
It from the synopsis, it almost has the feel of a Silver Age story, where he goes back in time, you know, encounters King Arthur, and then comes back, but, you know, not having really done anything too much other than change the coin. It almost reminds me of the story that Gene and I did that started us on this journey from, was it World's Finest, I think it was, where yes. Superman and Batman were back in King Arthur's day. But anyway, I just wanted to give a shout out to that because Gary bought enough to send me a message about it. But we're here today to talk about the conclusion of, in my mind, one of the best 12 Max series.
I believe so.
One of
yes.
the best maxi series that I've ever encountered, and there are several that would rival it, but this is right up there with all of them. And I think we left off. Everybody, all of our heroes were in grave danger, and we were wondering how they were going to get out of it. And I guess we'll start off with the synopsis to issue number 12.
Yep. And since that's an even issue, it is mine. So, as I mentioned before, this came out in April of 1985. The cover date was January 10th, 1985. Just over 40 years ago from this recording. Story is by Mike W. Barr. Pencils by Brian J. Bolland. Inks, Terry Austin. Letters, John Costanza. Colors, Tatiana Wood. And your editor was the aforementioned Len Wein. On the cover, we have Castle Le Fay in the background looking like a mushroom cloud, with various items, including Arthur's crown, Excalibur, Morton's clothes, and a pistol, as well as Tristan's hand and an alien hand piled up in the foreground. Our splash page has the faces of Arthur and Morgan in space behind Planet 10, and our title of the issue is Long Live the King. At the main gate to Castle Le Fay, Guinevere is leading the group as Arthur and Galahad help the aliens with a battering ram. Inside, Morgan is gloating at the captured Merlin. Mordred is gloating over the body of Lancelot. And an amorphous Owen is explaining to Tristan that he can't be destroyed except by Morgan's magic. Tristan, who is slowly losing consciousness due to being strangled, drops the male-female talisman, which causes Owen to explode. This destruction frees Tristan, but destroys the talisman. Completely hopeless about ever getting a male body again, Tristan brings his sword up to his throat in order to commit suicide, but is stopped by Tom. Tom convinces Tristan that he could possibly live in a woman's body and still be happy, but their moment is interrupted by Gawain. Back outside, the aliens drop what look to be leeches on the battering ram. Several aliens and Neo-Men are incapacitated. Arthur orders Galahad to bring the ship up to be used as a battering ram instead. Galahad rightly asks how we'll get back to Earth, to which Arthur replies that if they don't win, there will be no Earth to return to. The ship is brought up, and Arthur's team, along with their alien allies, board. This causes Morgan's aliens to jump onto the front of the ship, weighing it down. Galahad tells everyone to exit, and that he'll join them soon. He regrets his lie, but says goodbye to his father as he presses the self-destruct button. The ship explodes, and Arthur understands the sacrifice. He leads Guinevere into the castle. Inside, Mordred has heard the explosion. His utterance of, "Good Lord!" is enough to bring Lancelot back into action. Lancelot gets to a kneeling position, and Mordred is just about to deal the killing blow when he's interrupted by Arthur, who is pissed and backed up by the remaining knights. Arthur realizes that Matthew is indeed Mordred, and says that he regrets what he has to do. Mordred cries, "Liar!" and attacks, saying that Arthur always wanted him dead. Arthur doesn't even try to argue, as Mordred wouldn't believe him anyway, but simply cuts off Mordred's hand, a la Darth Vader. The hand grows back, and the fight spills into Morgan's throne room. Arthur deflects a magic blast from Morgan, and she points the magically bound Merlin, distracting Arthur. Mordred lines up a sword swing as Lancelot, being helped in by Gawain and Guinevere, yells out a plan. If Merlin, the son of the devil, touches the Grail, a supreme holy relic, then something is bound to happen. Arthur uses Mordred's momentum from the swing to toss the evil knight into Merlin. The result is Mordred's Grail armor exploding, Mordred being reduced to a skeleton, and Merlin being freed and justifiably angry. Merlin makes Nyvain's tongue strangle herself, and Morgan's infection go crazy. Morgan reaches for the piece of Mordred's breastplate which had the image of the Grail on it, but Merlin kicks it away. Morgan is overwhelmed by the disease, and all the remaining evil aliens, along with Morgan's creations, attack the knights. They are defeated rather easily, and the heroes leave. As they rest, though, Morgan's body goes through a transformation. Now a spider monster, Morgan summons the aliens that were attacking Earth, who appear in the sky over the castle. Arthur orders Merlin to transport the others away as he deals with the final threat. Arthur wishes Lancelot and Guinevere happiness as he turns to his half-sister. Morgan says she will still find the knights, but Arthur uses Excalibur to split the very atoms of a stone pillar in front of him, causing an atomic explosion which destroys Castle of Fae, Morgan, the aliens, and Arthur himself. The Grail reforms and disappears. On Earth, global celebrations are underway as the war is completely over. The knights are paying their respects to the graves of Kay, Percival, Galahad, and Arthur. Lancelot points out that all of them have come back from the dead before, so it's possible they aren't fully gone. Merlin compliments him for this and then bids them all farewell, while he goes to plan and ponder until the cycle begins again. In Johannesburg, Gawain is reunited with his family and gives his son the sword medallion. On New Camelot, Tom is reading La Morte d'Arthur when Tristan calls him to come to his room. Initially excited, Tom has his hopes dashed as Tristan introduces him to Isolde. The two lovers are leaving together, but Tristan wanted to thank Tom for everything first. Later, on Earth, Tristan and Isolde are in Isolde's apartment, where Tristan is insisting that Isolde needs a man. Isolde reminds Tristan of their first night together and shows him a bed surrounded and covered by roses. Tristan finally gives in, and the two make love. Elsewhere, on New Camelot, Guinevere and Lancelot are going over positive pregnancy test results. Both hope that the baby is Arthur's. Later, Tom is leading a team that is rebuilding London. He looks up to the stars, and we are transported to another planet, where one alien is being chased and shot at by others of his race. He comes across Excalibur in a stone, which he pulls out. We end on the alien, holding the sword aloft, as the spirit of King Arthur looks on in the background, and the road goes ever on.
First question. Is the alien at the very end supposed to be a reincarnated Arthur, or is it an independent alien who's worthy of Excalibur and Arthur's spirit is just looking on?
I have always read it as it's an independent alien and Arthur's just looking on.
I prefer that reading of it, honestly, because if it is a reincarnated Arthur, I want him in Arthur's form.
Right, yes.
Just like when he was reincarnated at the beginning of the story, he still had the medieval look about him and not, you know, current.
Well, that's the thing, though, because the beginning of the story, Arthur is the only one, well, except for Merlin, that has not been reincarnated. He was in that tomb for 2,500 years.
Yeah, actually, yeah, you're right. He did not have a life that was, you know, veiled from his true identity, whereas everybody else did.
Right.
So that's an interesting thing. I can't say enough how much I love this series. It wrapped everything up really well. I think this particular issue might have benefited from being a double-sized one, just to allow a little bit more tension, a little bit more battle, a little bit more time to develop those resolutions, because we did have a lot to resolve in a regular sized issue. And for all I know, that was the original plan, because it took a year between issue 11 and issue 12. And, you know, with the delays and all, it might have been like, this is what we can get done. And what they got done was great. But I think it could have even taken it to another level. Like I said, if you had double sized this one and really just, you know, played with those resolutions just a little bit more.
I agree with everything you're saying. The one piece I will say that I do like about how the story wraps up, though, is it resolves so much, but also there's things that can't be resolved in the time frame we're looking at. I like that there were certain things with these characters that we've kind of in our own head got to figure out how their life's going to go from here. And I really like that aspect of it. And I'm totally agreeing with everything you're saying. I mean, you're talking about more story in this time frame, and I agree. I would love to have seen more than that, because I feel like there's things that they could have given more space to. But as far as the choice in how to wrap it up and to give us that kind of feeling of, I'm still thinking about beyond issue 12 with this story, mm-hmm. I think that's something that's a success of this, feeling like there could be something more. And that part I thought was something that was really, really done well. Particularly, I thought the Amber story, you know, was I thought
yes.
That arc, I'm glad it didn't like wrap up where I felt like Tristan's really 1000% like solid after this. I actually liked this is still a feeling out process of that piece, because the end goal can't be attained anymore. So what does life look like now? And I like that that wasn't something that was tied up into a nice neat bow, only because I felt like this story was so smart and so like real in how it was touching things at that time, that I felt like they did a really good job with all the characters, I think, of giving them these wonderful arcs that were worth following. You could have just focused on Arthur, you could have just focused on Guinevere, and then said, hey, we gotta do an arc with Lancelot and just stuck with the big three. I'm glad they didn't, because to me it was much more compelling to feel like this is truly a story of King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table, and of course the villains and everyone in there. I felt like that made me much more invested in this. This had to be a maxi series how it was handled.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it does feel a little bit like, oh, we gotta tick all these boxes. We gotta take care of Free Merlin, take care of Mordred, take care of Morgan, take care of the aliens, and, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, we got to do all this. So, yeah, if it was double size, yeah. you would have when the aliens and Morgan's minions attack them, it's a two-page spread, and they just basically trounce them. They're gone. You could have added to that battle, like, oh, is Gawain going to make it home to his kid? You know, is... is Tom's healed now by the Grail, but is he going to survive this? You know, all you could have had that a little more tension than just like a rout. But for what it is, and you know, like a year between issues, there's some issue, you know, some problems in there somewhere, scheduling, whatever. But you know, for all in all, I think this is a great wrap up to it. And like you said, Sean, there's so many unresolved things. Like if you look at where are we? Page 29. It's when Guinevere is telling Lancelot that the pregnancy test is positive, and she says, "I hope it's his." Lancelot is looking away, and Guinevere's looking at him like, "What's he going to say?" Then he comes back and says, "So do I." Does he, or is he just saying that? You know, there, everyone has unresolved issues, but especially Tristan, because yeah, there's no way. I don't know what medical science is in the year 3000, but in his mind, there is no way he is ever going to be a man. And even, you know, with the love of his life there, it's hard for him to accept what's going on. So, yeah, it's as it has been, it's extremely well written. It's got extremely good art. The story, it comes to a satisfying conclusion, but if they ever had decided to pick it up again, whether that be with the characters we know or following this new alien with Excalibur, you have plenty of ways to go with it. So that's leave them wanting more, as they say.
Yeah, I think leave them wanting more is actually the right answer there, because I have mentioned before that I'm a little bit of a tool for sequels. If there's characters I like, if it's a story I like, and they're going to give me more, I'm usually just saying, yeah, I want more. Even if it's going to be a somewhat, you know, diminished product. And I think that's what we'd be looking at here. I think we could easily have Camelot 4000, Camelot 5000, have reincarnations go on. But I don't know if they could possibly reach these heights again. And because of that, it's probably good that they didn't do it. And I suspect, you know, again, with the year wait between the 11th and 12th issues, that they probably couldn't have scheduled to do another run at this, which means somebody else would have taken the reins and run with it. And that probably would have been very disappointing. That's, you know, everybody talks about, you know, Watchmen and whatever, and then there were those series beyond Watchmen, which I honestly didn't read. But from what I understand, they were a disappointment in comparison. People talk about Kingdom Come, and then they did a whole bunch of different stories on that. And what I did read was never at the same level as the original story and was a disappointment. So if they tried to revisit this world, it probably would end up being a disappointment. And I'm better off just enjoying what I have. Now, just as a thought, the way Lancelot is smiling when he says, "So do I." I think he had to be introspective for a moment. He does have some regrets that it's not, you know, that if it's not his child, but I think ultimately he has that kinship and love of Arthur that he can live with the fact of raising Arthur's child with the woman he loves.
Yes.
And I think you're hitting the key there. I think he also loves Guinevere. And you make that choice when you do that. In that scenario, and I think that plays heavily into it. I mean, he loves Arthur, but certainly, as we know, he loves Guinevere more. And I actually really liked how real that felt, too. You know, the hesitation I thought was brilliant, because that's something they did not do in this. They didn't do these kind of trite little, let's make everything tie up with this nice little loving bow. It was more real and more grounded. It actually made me feel these characters were alive a lot more because of the choices they made. This is really strong writing and art. The marriage between these two in this is really fantastic. I actually encourage anybody, if you've never read this, like if you read it back in the day and kind of had the disjointed experience of the time in between, go back and read this as a graphic novel, because this story, man, when you really play out these characters all the way through, whew.
Yeah, and I mean, talking about the art, back on that same page with Lancelot and Guinevere, Lancelot is now the guardian of the Grail. And we saw when the Grail reformed and disappeared, Lancelot's face. So, does he know where it is? You know, what's going on? We don't know there. But if you look on the headboard above their bed, not only do they have a cross, they've got a Buddha, and then they've got, and I'm not going to even attempt it, it's one of the Hindu gods. I'm not even going to try and place it. But so that shows that he learned from the former Grail Guardian. You have all these different religions. There could be a Grail in every single one of them, so you can't just be laser-focused on one. You have to accept everything.
Details in the artwork, I think, were something that was really key, because when you're right, when you can start looking at backgrounds, this is an example of where I don't know why there was delays. You've got to go back in history and see those pieces. But, man, what they gave us in the end product, when you're looking into the background, how often do you look into the background of a comic? Sometimes you can't. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're dealing with a regular monthly book, they have to meet those time deadlines. In this particular case with this maxi series, they erred on the side of this has got to be done with a similar quality with every issue. And stuff like that is great.
Again, as has been the case throughout, I think the art is exceptional. I'm looking at it a little bit, though, and I think maybe it's correct, maybe it's not. But I'm thinking that possibly the inking was a little bit more rushed than usual, because it doesn't look to me to have quite as clean of a hand as Terry Austin usually does. And there seemed to be a little bit more thick lines and darkness to it. It's still exceptional, don't get me wrong. But it doesn't seem to have the same feel as the first 11 issues did. Not that Terry Austin didn't ink all 11 anyway, but he inked whatever, like the last six?
Yeah, he inked the back half.
So, you know, I do think it seems to be a little darker in the inking. Not necessarily to its detriment, just different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys noticed the same thing or not.
I am, as you're mentioning it. You know, I'm looking at it. I got to admit, I didn't notice it before you were saying it, but I mean, as I'm looking through, I'm like, no, he's right.
Yeah.
There's definitely a thing there.
Yeah, and it is kind of a dark ending, so that, you know, maybe that was intentional. I don't know. Especially the inking on Tom's face when he goes to Tristan's room. It's like, oh, that's a real creepy smile.
But I did like the fact that they did throw in the two panels of Tom being involved with the rebuild. So, like, that he found his destiny, kind of. You know, he found his purpose. He wasn't just, you know, going to live being depressed over the loss of Tristan.
He needed that closure too as a character, because, you know, we start off with him in the beginning discovering Arthur, and that was like his moment, right? Where do you go from there? You know, and I'm glad that they gave us this sense of what his purpose was afterwards, because otherwise you'd really be left wondering, and he's kind of our gateway into all of this, where we're kind of like riding along, me and Tom. So I was glad that they gave that piece. There's also that sense of throughout the series, especially as we're getting towards the end, there's this devastation that's going to be coming because of what's going on there. The idea that there would be something to rebuild on that scale really hits home that, like, they survived this. And I really liked that. It's to the point of it being a dark ending. I love that it's a good ending where the heroes won, but they won at a cost. It felt like there was a cost to the planet. It felt like there was a cost to the heroes. And that part, like, I really liked that sense of, as with anything, consequences. And just feeling what that looked like. That this really had a story that mattered. It actually goes back to kind of what you were saying before, Paul. I love to see more of these characters because I loved this so much, but I don't at the same time because of the fact that this is so good. I like playing out the story. I play out the story in my head as far as where I think they were going. And sure, if there's a writer out there who's got that killer story that can go toe to toe with this, I want to read it. But it's a hefty challenge because what was given here keeps my wheels turning every time I reread it.
That's the thing. I have my doubts that it can be. You know, sometimes, you know, they say you can't go home again. Sometimes you can't. You know, every once in a while people surprise you, but for the most part you can't. So now Galahad sacrifices himself in the story, and I'm trying to bring myself back through the story. Did Galahad have a life to speak of prior to the rebirth?
No. In fact,
he was
when
ready to commit
Lancelot...
at that point, was he not?
Right, because he had, I don't remember the exact circumstances, but he had failed, he was a samurai who failed his master, and so he was about to commit suicide, but Lancelot found him and brought him in. So this is Galahad going back to where he was, but now he, instead of killing himself because he failed, he's killing himself to help them succeed. Yeah. So it's a better death for him.
And then we have, is it Gawain that goes back to his family? And manages to, you know, you could see he's already starting to rebuild the relationship. So ultimately, while there is the sacrifice, their lives are still, you know, their lives post this story are not worse than they were. In fact, for the most part, they're better. You know, Gawain goes back to what he was. Galahad commits the suicide essentially that he was going to, but does so in a heroic manner. I'm trying to think, you know, obviously Lancelot and Guinevere have different lives, but they have more fulfilling lives than they did before. Who else sacrificed themselves during this? Kay, who was scheduled to,
Kay was about to be killed. Kay was about to be killed because he made bad bets with a loan shark, and so Arthur found him and beat the people off that were going to kill him. So if you look at it, Kay was going to be killed. Percival was a convict going to be turned into a Neo Man, and that's no life. Galahad was going to kill himself, and Arthur was already dead. So the four that died had nothing else to live for.
Yeah.
Everyone that survived did have something to live for.
And everyone that survived ends up in a better situation than they were before this story started. So even though we talk about the darkness, it is ultimately a happy ending.
Agreed, yeah.
So, and I am, you know, a sucker for a happy ending, I have to admit. Trying to think of any other points on this one. Until you pointed it out to me, I was not certain what was being dropped on them. For some reason, I didn't make the connection that those were leeches.
Oh yeah, because I said they're kind of like leeches because they're like burrowing into the skin.
Yeah, no, once you said it, it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense now. But until then, I couldn't, for whatever reason, I didn't make that connection. I just saw these things being dropped on them. Again, you know, my biggest criticism is I wanted more. I would have loved to have seen this be double-sized. And really just allow, you know, the battle with Owen to go on longer, the battle with Merlin and Morgan Le Fay and Modred to go on longer, just because I felt like that could have been fleshed out with a little bit more choreography. But otherwise, very, very satisfying ending.
Morgan Le Fay's ending I particularly liked because it became very horrific, just in the way that it was put together. It was something that they built throughout the story. You know, what was going on with her. And I liked that we got to see that was something that was a gradual build. And that was something that this series did really well, everything had a logical build from the beginning of the story straight on through. There were things that were little nuggets early on that became much more rich as the story went on. So it was nice to know, even with how long this took to produce, that at the end they were able to go back and leave nothing unchecked. And that ending with her, it's easy. I find myself often focusing on the heroes of the story just because, you know, they're the ones that I want to run with. But because of this story and how much I enjoy it, the villains, the various villains, the Grey Alarmer, all those pieces in there, I was just as intrigued by their story arcs and where they were going in this piece, because there's so much lore associated with these characters that it was something that really stood out for me. And I felt her ending, even, you know, today I've seen, not at this point in time, I've seen a lot of comics with some creepy stuff in it. That ending was real creepy for her.
But it was not unearned either, because they have given us the background with that slime on her, that she was looking for the Grail to cure that right from, you know, whatever it is, the last five issues. So that's a positive. Now, when Tristan uses the medallion to make Owen explode effectively, does he know that that's going to do it, or does that just drop out of his hand?
He knows something, because if you notice, the amulet was inside his glove. He had to take the glove off and then drop it. So it's not like he was just losing consciousness and there it goes. It was a purposeful thing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, better to have that chance, I guess, and possibly lose it than just die right there. You know, it's a the night thing of never giving up.
Right.
Well, I think
that gives it a level of sacrifice, because, you know, he's holding on to that. The reason that's in his glove is because he's protecting it with his life, because that's going to be the thing that can transform him back into a man's body.
The only other thing I want to say on this one, and because I just read this week again, just because you guys had texted me and graciously invited me to be a part of this. So I went back through and reread it. I think what really stood out to me is sometimes stories, when you read them, older comic book stories, you know, they feel dated. They feel like set to a time period. This does not. For anybody out there who's listening to this, maybe who didn't read this at all, do yourself a favor and read it. This story feels very today. There's a lot of depth to it. I think because of the fact that it's such a combination of different periods, you know, and what it's doing, you know, it's a futuristic story, but it's also yet a period piece with pulling in, you know, Arthurian legend and all of that. This just really works today. This really could be released right now, and people would be talking about this. It's that good of a story. So please don't pass this one up if you have not read it. Just because that stood out to me. Because sometimes books, I want them to feel good. I want them to feel like that period, because I want to go back to the time when I originally read it. This is definitely something I grew up with, you know, the time period, but it feels like this could be released now.
Yeah, I agree. There's nothing about this that makes it feel dated. This is definitely something that is every bit as effective today as it was 40 years ago. And I'm going to...
Yeah, especially, you know, with the issues that Mike W. Barr wrote into this, Tristan being the most obvious one, but, you know, infidelity and so on, you know, it's just... It's all stuff we're still dealing with, some more to the fore than others 40 years ago. So, yeah, it's the writing definitely holds up.
And I guess, you know, that's a little bit of a byproduct of its... based upon a story that was written when did Mallory write
1200s, I want to say, somewhere around there.
So yeah. I would say it's time tested at this point. Now, you know, I mean, I wanted to mention for everybody listening, we're going to do a companion episode to this on Is It Yours, where we're going to review one of the movies that does the Camelot legend, Excalibur. And as I was watching that, I started, you know, my mind started thinking about the whole connection. And you know, there's the hero's journey aspect of things. I mean, I think you see it more when you watch that movie. But it's the legend of King Arthur, the legend of Robin Hood. Some of these things are just, even if you don't have a deep, deep knowledge of them, which I don't, they're just fun to ponder on and think about and get into it and get the lore. And when they do it right, it's just, it takes you to another world. And I think that's what the story did. So I'm going to say this issue gets solid A's for wrapping up the story well, and this miniseries is an absolute A+.
Yeah, I'm gonna be right there with you. The cover on this one, you know, it if you don't know what happens in the issue, it gives you this foreboding of all the death and destruction on the front. If you do know, it's like, okay, well, now I understand the mushroom cloud. But yeah, the art, as always, is amazing. The writing is terrific. I'm going to give this, as well as the whole series, just A+.
I started off by reading issue 12 this week, just because of the fact that you guys had texted me and said, hey, let's get together and do issue 12. And I'm like, oh, I want to go back and read the whole thing. And I just did it for that reason. And that's a testament to issue 12. I was enjoying issue 12 so much that I'm like, oh, I kind of want to go back and reread all. This is a story I've read multiple times, so it was easy enough reading issue 12 to, you know, get back in. Oh, okay, everything that led up to this piece very easily, because it's just good writing. But man, this is just a fun ride. This is on a short list for me of stories that I would recommend to people. Like, you really need to read this. It's definitely representative of an era of comics where there was some experimentation with more mature storytelling. And mature doesn't, it's not always about, you know, the content. It's more of depth of storytelling. What kind of a tale, something that makes you think, and characters that you really care about. It's not about throwing things at you that sometimes stories get too heady and you lose the story in this. This is an incredible story with a lot of depth, with characters that keep you thinking. I'm still thinking after this, after having read it multiple times, about what I think happened to these characters. We could do probably a whole episode around what we think happens next for these characters. And I think the interesting part was, there's three of us. I think there's some similarities we'd have and some differences. And that's kind of the fun of imagining what you think might happen with characters that have kind of taken on a life of their own. So this is definitely an A+ for me. I mean, it's one of those. This is a story I will go back to as comfort food. Because of the fact that it's just that good. And I encourage people to do this. If you have not read this story in a while, or you've never read the story, do it. It's a must.
Absolutely. And then, you know, you say, you know, we talk about where we think the characters are going to go. I don't have a good enough imagination to even come up with an outline of a story that would rival this one.
Oh, yeah.
So I, you know, unless Mike W. Barr decides he wanted to do a sequel to this, I assume he's still around. Unless he decided he wanted to do a sequel, I don't want to see anybody touch it.
Right, yeah. Now, we give Len Wein the pass for that Camelot 500 because he was the editor on this. But he was also the editor on this, so he was intimately familiar.
But he also wasn't building on this story. You know, it was an independent touch on King Arthur. I can't sit here in good conscience and say nobody can touch the legend of King Arthur anymore.
Right.
But I can say I don't want them to take this particular iteration any further. Because, again, I think it would ultimately be a disappointment. Even though, if it happened, I would read it.
Well, yeah.
So, I guess that's going to do it for our look at Camelot 3000. Now, Gene and I have already talked about doing some other series or runs of issues, so we will continue to have episodes. I hope you're all enjoying, or I hope you've all enjoyed this, and will continue to ride along with us. In the meanwhile, though, as I said, we're going to do a crossover episode where we're going to cover the movie Excalibur, and the three of us are going to be doing that. And I'm sure there'll be some mention of this series in that as well. But tune in and listen to what we have to say. But you know what? Watch the movie first, because it's worth seeing. But in the meanwhile, thank you guys for coming on and doing this with me. And everybody, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.